Today's episode of Darkness Radio is brought to you by Surfshark. Surfshark is a cybersecurity product that improves your online privacy and protects you from hackers. Try Surfshark today totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/darkness. Enter promo code DARKNESS for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right, 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/darkness. Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Well, I promised you a surprise yesterday, and I meant it. I never fail to disappoint, and my guest today never fails to disappoint as well. As a matter of fact, I reached into the old bag of tricks, and I pulled out a familiar and beloved guest of ours, as a matter of fact. I know a lot of you have written in and have asked on social media for this guest to come back, so I didn't want to disappoint. Nathaniel J. Gillis is back with us, demonologist, investigator, and author. Nathaniel J. Gillis has been with us before, and a lot of you love his take on not only demonology, but on ufology. We're going to delve into a little bit of both today, and we're going to talk about some of his travels today as well, as he's been quite busy on the speaking front. So we're going to talk a little bit about where he's been. We're going to talk a little bit about what he's been doing lately and a little bit about his philosophy and has it changed at all in the time since we visited with him last. Nathaniel Gillis is a religious demonologist and author, as you know. After living in a haunted house, Nathaniel spent 20 years researching what it was that he encountered. Nathaniel is the founder of Preternatural Epiphenomenal Philosophy. I have to stop every time I say that word. Nathaniel has sought to refine the nature of haunting phenomena, ghosts, and high strangeness. He's often quoted on his concept of the demonic, quoted as saying the reason that they are playing by different rules is because they're playing a different game. We'll talk about that game here as well. Let's welcome back to Darkness Radio, Nathaniel J. Gillis. Nathaniel, welcome back.
Thank you, my friend. It's a stellar time to be back with you, and I'm always thankful to be on a show with you. So thank you for having me back on.
Thank you for coming back on. You are in high demand, my friend. Holy smokes. Yeah. I'll tell you.
It's insane, huh?
insane isn't the word for it. I had to wrestle 4 or 5 guys, I think, in order to get to you today. I know that much. Which is a good thing. It's always good to have people have your ear or want your ear or your opinion.
Right.
And that it seems like that means you're onto something. And I think that means something. It seems like right now we're in scary times. And I don't mean to sound a horn or be the town crier that's crying wolf, but it seems like things are getting deeper and darker in society, and it's almost like we're chomping at each other for one reason or another. And why is it that things are getting darker?
Right. Well, I think we're getting closer to some new insights and revelations that those on the other side of the veil don't want to happen. They do not want us to understand the true game that's being played in and within our species. And I think, you're right, though. It's getting darker, and it just goes to show you where we are in terms of the timeline and how much wounded healers are needed in society. We need people, not just to push the beast back in the darkness and not just to fight the darkness itself, but to fight for the light. I think that's a profound, profound thing we need right now.
So, you know, it's interesting to say that someone may feel like they have a calling to do this, but not everybody has a calling. How do you separate the people who have a calling for this to the people who maybe should find a way to support but not jump into it?
Well, that's a great question. for me, the only, that's the only thing I can refer back to. It's all my only frame of reference is personal experience. And I just know that whatever I encountered in my youth was instrumental in getting me to where I am. It's not a hobby for me, as you well know, my friend. It's something that it literally, I'm so passionate about it, where I'll go with like days without sleeping, and then I'll just crash and then contact all of my friends. You know, I'm going to go take a break for a little bit and then, you know, get back on the beat. But yeah, that's how you know when it's a passion that keeps you, sometimes even keeps you alive. No matter what storms life takes you through, there's just something, some ineffable, innate passion within you that constantly revives the what once was the burning embers of your heart. You're back into it and you can't really explain why. There's just something about it that pushes you out of depression, pushes you out of anything and everything life can hand to you. And so, you know, that's really what has contributed to my personal research and my career as a researcher is no matter what I've been through, and I've been through a lot of things that most people don't even know about. It doesn't really matter to me because it just furthers my passion to want to understand more about this phenomenon.
I want to take you on kind of a sideways journey before we start talking about your travels and what other researchers have said to you, what opinions they've thrown at you, what theories they've thrown at you, and we'll talk about that as well. I want to get your world perspective here for a moment, because here in the United States now, we've had these AARO meetings, these AARO meetings in Congress. Essentially, we've had a bunch of people sitting down, whistleblowers, not really experiencers. They haven't really sat in front of experiencers, but you have Congress people saying, we need to know everything. We need to know the truth. They get down, they sit in front of what they consider evidence. I don't know that it's actually evidence, but they've sat in front of a few videotapes. They've heard about some stories, and then they sit in front of all of this, and then we get a report a couple weeks ago that says, well, no, it was nothing but weather balloons, this, that, and the other. And it's the same old crap we've heard before. Deny. And that supposedly is the end of it. I need your opinion on this, Nathaniel. Because from your perspective and the perspective that you've given us before, and we'll recap it just a little bit. I want to know what you think when you sit and you hear these reports that come out of these AARO meetings and the experiences that these people have sat down and said that they've had. And when you see some of these craft that come out of the AARO meetings and some of these videos, and what is it that you're seeing when you see this stuff?
Well, an orchestrated attempt to obfuscate the truth. I mean, there are two things going on at once. There are alien actors, I guess I should say, within the government. Not just, I'm not saying, okay, in terms of they're aliens, but there is propaganda given to them that is disseminated amongst the masses, designed to again, lead us astray. So we have misinformation and disinformation. The truth of the matter is, if and when our government discloses the fact that we are not in charge of our airspace, what that and if and when they admit that there is in fact the other, then these ships have occupants, and these occupants are not all light, love and light, you know. And what that does is it validates hundreds of years of experiences and experiencers who have come forward, who have been told they're lying, gaslighted into mental health issues, and some have even been unalived by these individuals within the government. And so, yeah, it would create an entirely new field of research that they will have to stand accountable for. People like John Mack, who, when he was in London, allegedly looked the wrong way on a London street. That same night, five other John Macks were unalived in the same sitting? No. Wow. So when Grush comes forward, and I have my own opinions about Grush, but when he comes forward and says, yes, there have been people who've been taken out by this, this ufological industrial complex, if you will, he's not lying. And so, you know, if these individuals or the powers that be are willing to go to that degree to stop us, the public, from understanding the nuances of this phenomenon, at least to their understanding, then yeah, what's to say? Yeah, I mean, of course they're going to Here's a little bit of stuff, you know, fluff, and oh, that's just swamp gas. It's the old narrative. But yeah, I think that as a movement of paranormal researchers and experiencers, we see through the smoke.
When you see that report, like I saw that report, did you think like I did that, oh, they got him? They got whoever it was that was the head of this committee, and that's it. Yeah. That's it. We finally gotten to, yeah, you just wash your hands of it, and that's all we're going to get out of Congress.
Right. And here, I mean, we're dealing with a profoundly complicated issue. I mean, the deeper and darker you get into who's actually in charge, it's essentially going to be the smoking man in the X-Files. People that, I mean, you can't even look them up on Google. They don't exist.
Yeah.
And so whereas presidents will come and go at the at the maximum, you'll have to deal with the president himself or herself for maybe 8 years, if that. So they're not going to disclose that to an individual who's going to be a working actor for a short amount of time. You know, I mean, yeah. So whatever and whoever we're dealing with are men in black suits who do not exist, who work for think tanks that do not exist, that I know for a fact have actually approached men that I've fellowshipped, lectured with, and personally know. And so, yeah, it's fascinating what's happening in the field, but I take that with a grain of salt and just walk away.
So these men in black don't necessarily have our best interest at heart, or are you saying they do?
Oh, I've never thought they've had our best interest at heart at all. I mean, the powers that be, who are pretty much, at least in my perspective, the deepest into the research, are not just in charge of think tanks or in charge of a conglomerate of companies who are trying to reverse engineer what we're capturing. Not just that, but the evidence suggests that they are in charge of almost like a secret mystery school, which is centered around the occult practices and how the phenomenon responds to the occult aspect. And so, yeah, the idea is if we can conjure them, we can control them. If we can control them, we may be able to inherit certain technologies to which we can reverse engineer. And so it's deeper and darker than what a lot of people are willing to believe.
Hence why they respond to both the the duality of it. I get
the duality.
What you're saying.
Okay. Not a dichotomy, my friend, the duality of it.
Okay.
And so the idea I've been wrestling with as of late, and you know what? It's hard not to be repetitive. You know, the amount of shows I do, it's like if I'm going to have to be fresh material every day, that's hard. Okay. Sure. So if I do repeat myself, bear with me. But yes, the old monarch. Okay, well, moniker of the phenomenon being solely nuts and bolts. It's we're done with that. Now, if the model of the phenomenon itself is wrong, in other words, if it's just technology thereafter, if the model is wrong, then our timeline for disclosure is equally as wrong, my friend.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the earliest contactees, they were not in space. They were not working with, you know, scientists. No, Albert Bender, George Hunt Williamson. Right. All of these individuals were building altars in their attic. They were using incantations and modalities inherited from Aleister Crowley. Ouija boards, my friend.
Yeah.
To the point where Williamson was channeling extraterrestrials, in multiple voices in unison, coming out at the same time, harmonizing, if you will, out of his body. And so I believe that that is the closest modality in terms of what this phenomenon represents to us as a species. Again, technology seems to be just them complimenting us and pandering to what we feel we need. What is at the source of the phenomenon seems to be the occult practice, which is not modern. It doesn't stem from modernity. It stems from antiquity, which leads me to my next point. If our model of the phenomenon is wrong, then our timeline for disclosure may be equally as wrong. What if disclosure is not in the future in terms of, oh my God, we're going to inherit some incredible technological advance? What if disclosure arrived at the erection of the very first altars to which this intelligence was responding to initially? That is what I've been thinking about as of late.
That's mouthful. That's incredibly eye-opening. You know, I've never thought of it that way. That maybe disclosure's already happened. I mean, and we're
right
as looking a society.
For the wrong thing.
Yeah, as a society, we're behind the eight ball. We essentially disclosure's already happened, and we, you know, the technology really is the carrot at the end of the stick. We really,
it appears to be.
Yeah, we're really taking the bait, and we're all being led by the nose.
Absolutely. And yeah, the idea is, even within the Collins Elite Research, was a branch of the Department of Defense that was researching the occult connections to this intelligence. They were under the belief that when the phenomenon courts the human condition, it is courting our desire to transcend, to become more than what is known as human or mankind. And so there is this kind of cognitive interface, this sociological interaction with whatever this intelligence represents, where you start to realize that no matter what incarnation it takes throughout history, no matter what evolution it manifests to us as a species, there are certain agendas, there are certain behavioral patterns that are interwoven into the fabric of history. No matter what it manifests, it will respond to certain things. And my friend, unfortunately, those are incantations. Those are incantations and conjurations, if you will. And that leads me to suggest and believe, rather, that if we're dealing with percentages, that it's possible that technology itself is just a byproduct. It's just them. Again, here's the carrot in front of the horse. The question that I've been asking as of late is, okay, what are we leveraging? What within the human condition does it want from us? It's giving something to us, but what is it demanding in return? And that leads us into a rather gloomy labyrinth.
Well, I mean, it's not a far jump if you think about it, Nathaniel. I mean, you look at society as it is now, we're all buried in our devices. And so it's a soul-sucking device. We're looking at it, we're consumed by it. And we're all looking into these devices and we're not associating with each other. And so there's no connection between each other. So really, hasn't it already succeeded?
Yeah, it's succeeded in, of course, the divisiveness right now in this day and age. It's sad. But, you know, as of late, I've been hyper-focused on the various intersectionalities between the occult and whatever we consider these intelligences to be, even suggesting the fact that we may not at all be dealing with various intelligences themselves. These may not be a plurality of beings. It may all be coming from a singular source that has evolved according to our awareness of it, and it is evolving in order to evade. Okay. And this gets back down to, you know, it's true, the truest nature we've seen yet is that the reason it is incarnating into various identities, diversifying itself throughout history, is because when we, suffering from the human condition, when it appears as a demon, we apply demonic rules.
Okay.
Right. And if it appears as an ET, well, an ET behaves like an ET. It's going to run experiments. Meanwhile, the true proto-intelligence behind it is operating each of these archetypes as a way to obfuscate the true source, its true origin, and its true agenda. And so that's why when I look at the conglomerate of manifestations we now know as the paranormal, I've had to sift through the various, again, archetypes, incarnations, masks that it has tried to convince us of in history, and look at the behavioral patterns. Right. Well, I mean, again, when you start seeing the models of the phenomenon that kind of collapse within themselves, no wonder we have Mr. Blue, the alien gray, appearing in the Skull Experiment. Why? Same source. So it makes sense as to why now, at least that model does. It makes more sense as to why they were using Ouija boards to contact extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same source of phenomena. So that has been my approach as of late. And thankfully, it has it's been extremely advantageous in the research.
So in previous shows, you've said that it's not even a duality, it's a singularity, that it has it has rebuked different religious symbols and done it all in the same body. So if it were
all
to
the same body,
if it were to possess a body, it would mock different religious symbols all in one body. It would etch it into the chest.
Insane. It is insane. Yeah. Subdermal anomalies coming from inside to the surface of which, mind you, which is an update since we've last talked.
Okay.
I am good friends with a guy that is connected to practitioners. I'm going to, and I already have in a way. I've sent these photographs out to virtually every practitioner within the mystery schools, even if it's, you know, Sophism, whatever.
Okay.
And to my knowledge, none of them can validate or verify the use and employment of these religious amulets. Now, this is a new aspect of my research I'm going to introduce today. I introduced the other day on a show, but I'm going to go deeper perhaps today. That is that if in fact it is the esoteric right that they seated us with and not technology, if technology was a secondary consequence of building altars and reaching whatever is pregnant in the darkness, then that would mean that these beings themselves have a knowledge, right, of sorcery, esoteric principles and powers, something that is alien to us as a species. Mm-hmm. Because if we were in, let's say in antiquity, we were giving these amulets in order to conjure them, in order to influence their world in their dimension. If they themselves, by virtue of the photographic evidence that we're talking about,
sure,
by virtue of the alien amulets imprinted underneath the skin of this experiencer I'm referring to, if that is some form of alien sorcery, then that would mean just as we are using our amulets to affect their world, they must also be using their amulets to affect another, which opens us up into a multi-layered dimension or an idea of dimensions.
Okay.
Where just as powerful as they are in our world, there seems to be another intelligence equally, if not more powerful, in theirs. And so that's why it seems to be bleeding into our reality, where we go into hauntings and we see the remnants of the occult, not knowing why.
Interesting.
And so, yes, it is a combination of, yes, sometimes it is our practitioners. It is us. However, there are times, especially within malevolent hauntings, that we walk in and realize there's something alien here. There's something, and this is not just limited to, okay, it's bulbous eyes, it's the alien gray, but the very acts of sorcery that is being performed in some of these hauntings stems from them trying to influence another world, and by virtue of that, influencing ours. I don't want to make it complicated.
Right.
What I'm suggesting is this, that far more than alien abductions and all that, there is a darker source here, and that is something to do with magic and sorcery.
Let me ask you this, Nathaniel. You look at some, and I know we're getting a little dark here on Easter week, but you look at some of the practitioners like Crowley, or you look at some of the practitioners that tried to push the boundaries. Do you think it was some of those practitioners that maybe went a step too far and might have communicated with some of these that you're talking about?
Absolutely, no doubt. That's irrefutable at this point, my friend. When you're looking at Jack Parsons and his ability, again, to access the higher powers and then take the information given to him from them, he filtered that right into his rocket research. And so, but the problem is, who is conjuring who here? There's evidence to suggest that we are measuring the origin and conclusion of the experience based upon when they manifest to our senses. And that may not be true at all. Evidence, especially within demonology, suggests that it could begin as a thought. And by obeying the thought, get up and get out. Where am I going? Go to this undisclosed location in the desert. That's when the experience begins, not when they build altars. It begins at the moment of obedience, when they think, okay, this seems to be a good idea. And I suggested this earlier in a lecture I did last month, was when we have cases of what's called head magic, where practitioners of the occult in antiquity, they would go in and they would take pieces of metal and they would place it underneath the tongues or even implant it just literally anywhere in a corpse, that the phenomenon would actually take the consciousness that's in the metal of the unclean spirit carved into the metal and create another biological avatar, step into it. What I'm suggesting here is that was a way of self-replication, but the concept I'm working on is, where did the idea to do that come from originally?
Yeah.
He's not reading books about occult practices. I mean, we're talking about the primordial man here. So I believe that we have to reassess, re-examine when the encounter originally begins. Because if we're looking at right now, modern day practitioners who are doing the same incantations, performing the same liturgical rites, yeah, sure, the phenomenon manifests at the conclusion. But where did it manifest in the beginning? Because that is the timeline we should be looking at. Not when it, okay, well, now it can be recorded on camera. Right. But when did it enter the headspace of the practitioner?
I've always had that question myself, you know, especially with early man or man before, what's a good way of putting this, Nathaniel? Man before...
Or recorded history?
Recorded history, yes. Yeah, before extreme organized religion comes into play. How does that, yeah, how does that start to form thoughts, or how does that pop into the head? Because it's you know, a lot of people might say, well, aliens, well, okay, well, now we're jumping back into the realm that we're talking about. Well, what is that alien? You know, what do you attribute that alien to be? You know,
correct. And where are they coming from? Why is it that the scatology in which our literature matches that, the secretions within UFO abduction? Uncomfortable, because a lot of people, again, materialists who are now dogmatists, refuse to go in that direction. But I'm saying, why not? You know, but you know, you can only take researchers to the very limit of their knowledge regarding the phenomenon if they haven't read the books, the case studies. I can't demand them to discuss it. But you know, going back to this idea, okay, are they extraterrestrials? Or are they interdimensional? And one thing that's fascinated me as of late is Nick Pope was recently on a Whitley Strieber show. And he mentioned something. I know everybody has their own reservations, but it's fine. I do too, about certain researchers. It's, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Human nature. But he mentioned that the ETH, the extraterrestrials, or ETHs. Extraterrestrial hypothesis. Anyways, the bodies we are in possession of, he said, they possess interdimensional qualities. First time I've heard of that.
Me too.
And yeah, and I thought, what is he trying to say here? Right? Like, what do you mean? I mean, that's you got to unpack that for me.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because I'm like, okay, what do you even mean by that? And so, but that again, that leads me into apparitional theory, which is maybe another interconnectivity between what we've seen in hauntology and ufology, where beings have the ability to materialize to the touch and dematerialize out of nowhere. And so it's fascinating because, right, it's another intersectionality, which would also answer the beckoning question of how are they being witnessed in seances? I'm trying to contact so-and-so in the afterlife, and out of nowhere, an alleged alien appears in the room. What? The models are collapsing upon themselves. And I think, and since I haven't been on your show in a while, I'll just go ahead with this.
Go ahead.
Is that the research I and others are doing now is saying, okay, we obviously know it's paranormal. That's obvious. Mm-hmm. We don't need the gatekeepers in the field to suggest it is, therefore everybody's, oh my God, they said it is, therefore it must be. No, we know that. People who've had, you know, boots on the ground investigations, we know that. And so by treating it as paranormal in and of itself, now we have the linguistic freedom to look at it at a macro level and say, okay, maybe we need to stop building walls between phenomena.
Okay.
Now we may be able to present bridges to everyone to say, okay, yeah, these are not just interconnectivities. These are variations of the phenomenon. These are the high marks of its evolution, where for fleeting moments, you and I, my friend, can make eye contact with it and say, wait a minute, that seems to be the same thing it was doing in the old incarnation. No wonder these bridges are just marked evolutions, not in its source and not in its agenda, but in terms of the masquerade it's been playing with us as a species.
Interesting. I tell you what, at that point, Let's stop for a moment. Let's take a break. Let's take a breath. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of your colleagues that you've been talking with and that you've been trading hypotheses with. And we'll see how things have changed and how you've swapped ideas and how this thought that you've come up with, how you've been trading these hypotheses back and forth and how this hybrid theory has come about. And we'll talk about your travels a little bit. And I've got some questions about that as well. You've come across some interesting stuff here, Nathaniel. Nathaniel J. Gillis is our guest. We've got a link to his Instagram in the description of our program here. Interesting stuff. I tell you, you never cease to amaze me here, Nathaniel, when you come on the program. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this phenomenon. We'll talk a little bit about the future. What does the future have in store? You know, as we move into a Holy Week here and a Holy Weekend, a time where we reflect on spirituality. What should we be reflecting on? You know, there's a lot of Christians out there that, you know, this is a high time. This is a high time where we're supposed to be celebrating renewal. And is this a time where we should have fear? I mean, it seems like the world is living in fear. Is there hope? I guess we'll talk about hope at the end of the program here, Nathaniel. I don't want to pee in anybody's Cheerios here, but we'll talk about that at the end of the program here as well. First of all, we've been talking about we're going to talk a little bit about protection at the end of the program as well. I want to talk about protection for your computer. I want to talk first of all about Surfshark, who's sponsoring today's program. I want to thank Surfshark, who is our sponsor on today's program. And I want to remind people about how I wish I would have had Surfshark VPN back when I got two of my bank accounts raided by a hacker. I reminded you guys the last time we talked about Surfshark, how it got raided. It was an absolute nightmare. It was the dark web. And I think we all think the dark web is just something that's in the corners of the internet that you'll never get affected by, that it's something that you'll never see, that it's just something that happens to pop up on the news and that you'll never be touched by it. Which is absolute nonsense. It can hit you at any time. Hackers can get to you at any time. And I'm attesting to that fact. The fact is that you need more protection more than ever. And you need it right now. Surfshark VPN has the perfect suite, not just a VPN or a virtual private network to put yourself behind, but they have a perfect suite that they put together for you to help you avoid these hackers from getting to you. Plus, it has some other benefits that I'll tell you about here in just a second. But let me tell you a little bit more about my story here, and then we'll continue. And I'll make it brief. Basically, your information gets out there very quickly. And if you don't have the right protection to put yourself behind while you're online, you're exposed. All your information. It just takes a matter of someone getting one of your passwords. And it doesn't matter. You can put as many numbers and letters and characters as you want in your password. It's just a matter of time, folks. They're going to get a hold of your information, your valuable private information, and they're going to clean you out. Now, there are certain protections at the bank. There are certain protections with credit card companies. There's certain protections with insurances that can help save you or try to save you, but nothing is 100% protectable. You're going to lose some money. It's going to happen. So you want to try to protect yourself on the virtual front. Luckily, Surfshark VPN is here to help. I wish I would have had this when I got hacked. So my information got out there on the dark web. Two of my bank accounts got hacked. I lost thousands of dollars. And it was my virtual profiles that got hacked, which is what killed me. When I talked to the banker, I said, how did this happen? They said, it was something where someone got a hold of a password. And I said, well, how do they do that? I don't, you know, I work from home. I don't get it. And they said, you know, it probably happened when you were out and about and you probably use public Wi-Fi somewhere. And I said, you got to be kidding me. They said, no. Surfshark VPN works on your mobile device. Have you ever heard of that before? You're using public Wi-Fi. You think I should be safe. It's public Wi-Fi. No. That's where you're most vulnerable. Folks, the age is here where you need protection wherever you go because you are most vulnerable. Here's the deal, folks. Surfshark VPN is here and here to help you. What is a VPN, you may ask? Well, it's simple. It helps keep you safe and private by covering you up like a mask, everything that you do online. When your device connects to the internet, all that information in a way is blurred out or encrypted. So anyone who tries to snoop on you won't be able to see what you're doing or where you're going at all from the location that you're at. So when you have a VPN up or a virtual private network, it's like wearing pants. When you go outside, all your important stuff stays private and it stays secure. And that's what you like. You can travel the world with just one click with Surfshark VPN. Surfshark VPN has a lot of different things in their suite that can help you as well that are going to keep you nice and secure. It has an alternate ID function, which creates a new identity and email for online registrations. So if you need to register for something online, it'll create an alternate email so someone isn't going to phish your email and be able to get to you that way. It's got clean web, which will block ads and pop-ups, including cookie consent requests, another way to phish you and get you. It's got antivirus, which will scan your programs whenever you download and install and use them. And it's got a malware system that will search for any malware that potentially might be trying to get to your system and try to phish for more stuff. Surfshark has got it all, folks. It's set up to ultimately keep hackers out. Oh, but there's more. There's more of a benefit here, too. Do you love Netflix? Do you love the streaming services that have one set of programs for you here in the U.S.? Well, guess what? Surfshark and their VPN service can allow you to switch to different regions so that you can get an alternate playlist from a different country. Just switch the region you're watching from, and you can get a totally different playlist of programs. And you can see that movie that you've always wanted to see, but it isn't available here in America. Surfshark VPN is hooking you up, folks. So here's the deal. How do you get a hold of Surfshark VPN? Well, it's real simple. We're going to secure your privacy with Surfshark, and we're going to save you a little bit of money. What you're going to do is go to surfshark.deals/darkness. And when you get there and go to checkout, enter your coupon code darkness for an extra 3 months free. Once again, go to surfshark.deals/darkness. And at checkout, enter coupon code darkness for an extra 3 months free. Here's the deal, folks. You're not secure anymore on the net. You haven't been for a few years. You might have been denying yourself and saying, you know what? I think I'm safe. I'll be okay. You're not okay anymore. Chances are your information is probably already out there. You need to take measures right now. Do it with one of the best companies out there right now. Take advantage of this offer today. Get an extra 3 months free when you use the code darkness. Go to surfshark.deals/darkness. Take advantage of this offer and protect yourself while you're online. Once again, use Surfshark VPN. Go to surfshark.deals/darkness. Use the code darkness for an extra 3 months free. Do it today. When we come back, more with Nathaniel J. Gillis. We're going to talk about the fact that some of these phenomena are just a step to the left of each other. That's going to happen here in just a moment. And we'll talk about the future. Again, we're coming into Easter weekend, which is a time of renewal. And let's talk about hope. We'll talk a little bit about hope at the end of the program. I know we've gotten a little dark here today in today's program, but is there hope for the future? We'll talk about that as well when we come back here on the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is Nathaniel J. Gillis. He is a demonologist, investigator, and author. We've got links to his books and to his Instagram here in the description of the program. Nathaniel, when we last left our audience, we're talking a little bit about the, I don't want to say cross hybridization, because that's not right. We're talking about basically about how these different paranormal phenomena basically are just a step to the left of each other, essentially. And we were talking about how the demonic aliens and whatnot may be essentially just one entity.
Correct. Yes. Propaganda. It's employing propaganda. I mean, how many times have you heard the number 666 being involved in hauntings?
Yeah.
All the time. Well, okay, it just takes a cursory knowledge of Aramaic and Greek gematria, which is the assigning of numbers to words and letters. Yeah, when you look up 666 in that correct text, language, you realize that that was just the number for Nero, that the author of that text was referring to Nero. And yet we see it in demonic hauntings. Why? Because the intelligence we're encountering is it's evolving according to the current theology of the time. Think about that. Not, it doesn't want to be biblically literate, because that would mean it's real. That it, the tradition, it's knowledgeable of, but it's employing this as a tactic. Well, what would a demon do to the, what would a demon to do, or what would a demon be seen as to the working man who has little biblical training? But hears and has heard that 666 is the mark of the beast. Of course he would appear as that. If it wasn't a real phenomenon, if it was just evolving according to the awareness of pop culture, not holding to a real historical timeline of theology. No. That's when I, as a researcher, was like, time out here. Time out here. Why is it always appearing as the, you know, oh, it's at 3 a.m. That's demons. Who told us that?
Right. Yeah.
The Trinity. Well, who believed that? Did they believe that? Hold on. When did demons originate? Well, according to biblical antiquity, the Old Testament. So they believed in the Trinity in the Old Testament? No. There's something wrong, my friend. And it's been quite an event in my life, because look at these cases. It's almost like I was researching something without knowing I was researching. And so to me, you know, possession is not just a relocation of consciousness, it's the replication of whatever the species is. And so by virtue of religious traditions, some, it has propagated mis and disinformation in order to get us to pay attention to something. Meanwhile, they're replicating their species in a way that we're just now starting to understand. But whatever this phenomenon represents to us, it has the proto-intelligence, has the ability to lean into and out of archetypes. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. With the extraterrestrial, there are rules that they allegedly play by. So it leads into that archetype. Well, according to demonology, right? Well, they have to, they're acting like demons. They must fear holy water. Okay, it'll lean into that archetype. Meanwhile, the true proto-intelligence, the source, the consciousness behind all of those incarnations, it's completely alien to us. We have no knowledge of what rules that actually plays by.
So are there actual universal rules to drive it back? I mean, you would think that, okay, so, you know, basic universal law says for everything dark, there must be light. So there has to, for every yin, there must be yang. There must be something to balance it out. So there has to be something that defeats it. If it is dark, there must be something light that must defeat it, correct?
Yes, within that model, I think that when we're looking at whether it's good or evil, it's a very binary way of presenting the data. I would suggest we're dealing with something that is alien to us in terms of morality. You know, H.P. Lovecraft presented a model of morality. It's called its cosmicism, where, and that's been most demonstrated by these beings, where it's not that they're good or bad. It's just you're an ant. And whatever it's doing, literally, unfortunately, it's bypassing this. And that's just one model. But in terms of what we can do, I have been employing iron, and I have instructed others to as well in malevolent hauntings, and we've had some success with it. But there are cases, you know, obviously sometimes holy water does work. But as we've discussed in times past, other times it will literally go out of its way. The proto-intelligence will. Mm-hmm. To make a statement that flies in the face of everything. I mean, even to the point where, just remember this, even to the point where, like, Malachi Martin was on a weekend, and he was performing an exorcism, and the exorcism was unsuccessful, but then he returns back to his personal quarters. And as he's asleep one night, there were four shadow figures that manifested to him by his bed. And in unison, they began to say the Lord's Prayer backwards. And I thought, for the longest time, my friend, I thought, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. You know, it's strange. It's not backmasking. It's quite literally just uttering the Lord's Prayer backwards. Yeah. Well, the Lord's Prayer, again, was used as a linguistic amulet against the darkness. But the ritual of saying it backwards stemmed from Eliphas Levi, and even before him, the practitioners of Kabbalah, it's a Kabbalistic way of exorcising entities. Isaac Luria, it's a Lurianic tradition. And so whatever this phenomenon was almost suggesting to the exorcist, you can say it forward or backwards. This proto-intelligence transcends that. Matter of fact, we're going to say it to you to show you and prove that. And so whatever we're dealing with, again, there are times in history, even now, where it will lean in and create religions to which it'll apply rules to the mask it wears. And I mean, when you're replicating not just your own species, but you're replicating with the intention of masquerading as something else, that's powerful. That's profound, my friend, to the point that when I meet Dearon Edna, Dearon Edna behaves like Dearon Edna, I'm going to put and accompany her, and I guess I should say, anoint her with Dearon Edna characteristics until it's not her.
Yeah.
It's something else. And so that something else is what we're researching. And yet it does give us insight into how it's been present with us, but absent from us, how it can maintain its identity without us ever truly understanding what and where and when it is. And I don't want to ramble, my friend, but it causes me concern because I think about it in very binary ways that I don't try to. But what kind of an intelligence would have our best interests in mind without actually coming forward and saying, okay, this is who and what I am? And if that is the truth, like, so if it was extraterrestrials, then why are they responding like spirits?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. The Love and Light crew that comes forward and says, well, these aliens have nothing but good intentions for us. Well, that's an excellent question. How come they haven't come forward and made themselves known and said, well, we have nothing but the best intentions, and the whole reason we're scooping up your nuclear weapons and the whole reason we're keeping your toys away from you is because we don't want you to hurt yourselves? Mm-hmm. What species doesn't come forward and tell you that we're just doing this for your own good? Doesn't your mother and father tell you we're just doing this for your own good? We don't want you to touch the stove because it's hot. You know, correct. Things like that. They teach you the lesson. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but
you're triggering me, man. You're triggering my thoughts in my mind because you're exactly right. Here's why. I'll answer that question. Here's why. Because our mother and our father do have our best interests in mind. There is nothing you can, good parents, there's nothing you can really point to and say, well, yeah, but you kidnapped me out of my own body and ran experiments on me, or you told me what it feels like to be murdered or to die. Huh? No, the reason they wouldn't do that is because, number one, their behavioral patterns and the historical record does not demonstrate that. It only takes one case to say, okay, wait a minute, that can't be all Love and Light. Right?
Right.
There's got to be something, at least something here where maybe their agenda went wrong or someone went really wacko on them. But no, I mean, so that's why. And I also believe that's why, again, that you know, our government doesn't want to come forward with disclosure, because, you know, those of us that are inclined and more in tune with what they're doing, it's like, well, yeah, how are you getting this technology? And they may very well be telling the truth. Yeah, that is our technology, but they're not going to disclose where they got it from.
Yeah. Or what kind of bargain they had to make to get it.
Very true. And this is why, you know, people poo-poo the Collins Elite, and that's fine. The Collins Elite, again, were physicists from the Department of Defense that were connecting the dots between Crowley, Parsons, and the phenomenon. And yeah, that's what they realized, was that our government, factions of them, were conjuring these intelligences. It wasn't an accident that these beings were responding to altars and incantations. No, that was a feature. It's not a bug. That was their idea, not ours, right? And so sure enough, and the idea was that within our government, yes, there were actors who were foregoing any and all consequences of conjuring these beings. And they would get metamaterials from them, even right 10 minutes from where I live. I live in Dayton, Ohio, okay? Mm-hmm. They're Wright-Patt Air Force Base, right down the road. They were performing these rituals there. And they were getting partially manifested metamaterials. Take a picture of it, touch it. It won't be there for much longer. So again, we need to understand the model that's being presented is not at all what is actually occurring. We're led to believe, okay, yeah, our scientists are going out there performing scientific experiments and are getting access to new technologies. Sure, that may be some of the case 10% of the time, but 90% of the time, they're going right where Tim Taylor's going, right? To a desert.
Yeah.
And building altars and trying to contact whatever this is. And so that's where I'm at with it. But again, the singular field hypothesis is something that needs to be reconsidered in new light of the evidence.
You posted something on Instagram, which I guess kind of goes along the same route that we're talking about, but it also is fascinating to me. You talk about when you had your own issue, talking about dream portals. I want to go down that aisle for just a moment. You wrote that, I think it's time we re-examine the dream demon hypothesis because there appears to be much more taking place. And you said that our experiencers being used as mortal portals. Mm-hmm. That thought terrified me because if you think about it, if you really delve into it for just a moment, that, and then you also wrote, what if consciousness is not merely the driver but the vehicle? And you think about it for a second, what if just by the act of sleep, just by the act of you unconsciously accessing a different consciousness are actually opening yourself up to a whole different realm, which you can be exploited?
Absolutely.
That's how I read that. And that's how that's where my mind goes to. Now, I'm not a doom and gloomer, but I think of possibilities.
Right.
Because it's not like our minds can consciously control that. It's not like the average person thinks of that. I mean, we drop out because we're tired. We dream because we dream. We can't control it. But what if something else of a higher intelligence can go, well, I'm going to pick that one today. And that's where I'm going to enter. Yeah. You know,
for those who don't follow me on Instagram, I don't have a website because it was too much to just maintain. So I just put my thoughts on Instagram sometimes. But anyways, I'm going to kind of tell you guys what happened and what my friend's talking about here. So essentially years ago, I went to sleep one night and I went into a dream. It was a really dark dream. I could feel it immediately. Very, very dark. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, where did this come from? And so in the nightmare itself, there was a featureless shadow woman figure, if you will, shadow figure in the shape of a woman. And she had mounted me, straddling me in the dream. And I was coherent enough, or at least conscious enough in the dream, to start flailing my arms. And I kept hitting my ex at the time, or my fiance at the time, rather. Now my ex, I kept hitting her on the back. I'm thinking, is this you? Is this you? That's what I kept saying. Until finally I woke myself up, and to my utter astonishment, that entity was literally on top of me. Not just in the nightmare, it was physically on top of me. And which led me to, okay, because, you know, I've studied dream demonology now for a decade or so. It led me to hypothesize, okay, are we merely mortal portals? Okay, either it was on top of me literally in order to interject itself into my dream, or it was interjecting itself into my dream to manifest upon me literally.
Yeah.
And so that's what leads me to believe that consciousness may not be the driver. It may be the vehicle, which also would imply that they're not just manifesting to us. They're manifesting through us, that there is a symbiotic relationship between this intelligence and who we are as conscious living beings.
I believe that.
Me too.
There's before I go to sleep every night, Nathaniel, this is just pulling back the curtain. I say Saint Michael's prayer, and I do so to protect my ethereal body in case it travels, to cast protection upon it, and then to protect my body so that nothing gets into it.
Right.
So I ask protection for my soul and for my body because I don't want anything to walk in. And
that's good.
That there's the reason for that, because I know that and it, when I was young, I had the out of body experience where I saw my great grandfather pass away. So I know that when I was younger, I did travel out of body when I went to sleep. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything sneaking in. And it sounds like it, and even from that young age where I had that experience, I don't want, if it does happen to happen again, I don't want anything similar to what you're talking about, trying to filter its way in, or trying to, especially something dark, trying to make its way into me or use me as a portal.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the evidence does suggest that then that can happen. But I mean, I think again, that the most elusive part about our existence, it's not science, it's not space, it's death. That is what we are the most alien to, and what is the most alien to us. And so whatever we're dealing with, by the amount of pattern confirming evidence, by the weight of the case studies, suggests that whatever we are dealing with is astral, or it is in somehow we lack a vocabulary for it, but the afterlife, whatever this is, exists in that dimension. Their knowledge of deaths that have yet to occur, and then they actually occur. The idea that manifesting to experiencers as the deceased, or even in the clothes that people have died in, to the point where in one case, one experiencer met a deceased individual that died that very day, was told her name, went back out of the experience, looked her up, and sure enough, they had died. So whatever we're dealing with, and now this right here, it kind of contradicts the evangelical model, because it's just really strange. But if that's who and what we're dealing with, then we're right back into antiquity regarding who the Rephaim, and it's a whole other show, but for people who are going to do research, the Rephaim, the deceased gods or ancestors who were liminal in existence, right? Present with, absent from, right? They're in between worlds, and that they influenced ours and tried to create covenants with our species, which just sounds exactly like what we're dealing with. You know, and voluntary initiations into mystery schools, build me an altar, I'll give you some technology. So yeah, whatever this is, as I said before, yeah, sure, it incarnates. But as much as the incarnations are modern, the incantations are ancient.
Interesting indeed. So I had talked earlier about the fact that you had traveled overseas, that you had met some of your peers, that you've talked back and forth. You talked a little bit about some of the people you had met off air when we had been talking. Tell people a little bit about your travels and who do you talk to, and how this has changed your philosophy a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about where you've been.
Yeah, so I was invited to lecture at the Awakening Mini Expo in Manchester, UK, the United Kingdom. And I presented there along with the goats of the field, you know, Steve Mara, Dr. Barry Fitzgerald, Paul St. Clair, the Kinsella brothers, and then lastly, Paul, or Mark Olley, rather, and Paul St. Clair. But yeah, amazing people, and it was incredible. It was a once in a lifetime experience for me. And more than anything, though, and this is true in my experience, you know, we do have good researchers in the field, but what's been disappointing sometimes, you go to meet them, and they're not as good of a person as they are as good of a researcher. And that's why they say don't meet your heroes. But man, when I met these individuals, it was life-changing because they're just awesome people. And to have that balance present was like, okay, you know, it's easy, right? It's easier on me to be around them and to, you know, it's just an amazing experience. But yeah, so they, you know, we had a blast of a time. I presented and my lecture was, and you guys, I'm pretty sure it's recorded, so maybe here in the future they'll present it, but the vulture is a species within, and the self-replication of their species is something I've been fascinated with. But yeah, so it was a blast, man. The awakening is it was a gift to me, and I fell in love with it. So it was a blessing.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What did you pull away from these guys? Did it change you in any way? Did it change your
Right.
outlook on things? Did you say, well, you know, did it change your philosophy at all?
Not at all.
No. Okay.
We come at it from different traditions, or not even traditions, different approaches. You know, it was refreshing because what I've been able to do is even as a demonologist, to my own demise, perhaps, strip the case studies from the religious dogma and just look at the behavioral patterns. And, you know, it's funny because both sides of the aisle, one group of them want me to say they're demons. The other, like, oh my God, don't say they're demons, say they're aliens. I don't know what they are. I'm just simply saying, right, that this is not a modern intelligence, that it's been here since the dawn of recorded history. And so a lot of my research was confirmed. Matter of fact, all of it. And,
On the other side of it, did you change some minds?
I don't know. I could tell you this much. Yes, I did. I mean, of course, I think because of the research I'm doing is new, I should say, fresh, or it's at least a unique perspective, one that is backed up by the weight of compounding evidence. And I presented it in such a way where it didn't seem dogmatic, right? I do my best not to do that because I don't want to be dogmatic. That's one thing I grew out of when I left evangelicalism. But it was like, right, okay, here's what it says, here's what it suggests, and here are the interconnectivities. And I received a lot of good reviews, very good reviews. One lady said that that was one of the best lectures she ever heard. So,
There you
take,
go.
I'm just kidding. No, yeah. She said that, but you know, I was like, oh my God. So it was really good. I loved it. More than anything else, though, it gave validity to the field I'm in. If, I mean, you know, it's been a lonely road because I thought I was the only one studying it from this perspective. And yet I'm not. And there are people who've, yeah, are very well connected that are also saying, hey, look, you know, we're looking at it similarly. So I love it.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So let's start to wrap with this, Nathaniel. We're coming upon, I know you don't want to look at things from an evangelical side, but
Yeah.
we're coming upon Easter week. We're coming upon we're in the spring season, spring equinox. Although you wouldn't know it if you're in Minnesota, but we're sitting upon a bunch of snow. You could kind of see it behind me. There's about
Yeah, I was looking at you.
about 2 feet of snow out there. But we're coming upon a time where you're at a time of renewal, and you know, things are going to start to bud out there, maybe eventually, someday, hopefully. And we're at this point where you would hope that, or we're in a season of hope, we'll put it that way. And you would hope things would start to turn around, at least for humanity. But it seems like, you know, you would want to turn on the news, you would want to turn on media, and you would want to see brighter days. Are we going to get there? That's what I guess what I'm asking. And how do we get there? because with the way things are now, mm-hmm. I don't want to be, you know, Debbie Downer here, but it doesn't seem to me like we're headed in that direction. How do you get to that direction? What does it take? I guess is the long question longer. What does it take to start to turn that tide?
Yeah. I don't know how much we can affect the geopolitical theater at this point, or how we can, outside of voting, change inflation or anything like that. I don't know. I don't know what that kind of, or what the future holds in that regard. I'll tell you what has helped me specifically when I feel like I'm drowning in the darkness, is I monitor my mental health, and I don't expose myself to certain images, especially with, you know, the Ukrainian war and all this stuff, you know, there's a lot of negativity that'll come through the news cycles, social media, and I have to kind of retrain my mind. You know, because a lot of times what'll happen, at least for me, you know, you see something like that, it'll kind of trickle down and find something else in you that you hate or dislike. And you're like, oh my God, it's overwhelming. Well, don't get triggered. Don't even allow yourself. Stop the first thought before it evolves into something you can't control. And so that's what I've done, is maintain your positivity, even in the face of negative events, and remind yourself, you know what? You're alive. You're breathing. Mm-hmm. You know, life is good. You know, you got chipmunks out there.
I do.
You know what I mean, my man? Yeah. And you know, that's what I do. And it's helped me a lot.
Is it putting yourself in that positive mindset? Is that the first thing that keeps that negative influence or even negativity or evil from coming around you in the first place?
Well, it's a coping mechanism I designed in my youth when I realized at one point, I'm never going to get away from this entity. You know, it's always going to be present with me. And when I was in its presence, I realized that it would alter thoughts in my head. And so I had to differentiate. My God, that ain't me. So these are not my thoughts.
Yeah.
So if they're negative, I don't receive it.
Interesting.
You know?
Interesting. Okay.
Because, belief is consent.
That's true. That's very true. I mean, there's no truer statement, I think, than that. Yeah, belief is consent. Absolutely.
Ed, there we go, buddy.
I mean, I don't know. Wow. I mean, that statement is so profound. I mean, for anybody, whether you're struggling with internal struggles or whatever it is, you know, if your self-esteem even. If you belief is consent. So if you believe, if you believe you're something, then you consent to the fact that you are that.
Yes. And it evolves. It doesn't just take that one belief and stop there. It goes down. I've had cases where the phenomenon would create entire scenarios in lives and then create the trauma and then feed on the fear it conjured.
Really?
So, but yes, belief is consent. And that's why sometimes when the phenomenon employs that cognitive interface, right? Do you believe I am who I appear to be?
Wow.
Well, yes. Then you consent to the archetype I've stepped into. That, my friend, we have to do another show on.
Yeah.
That's a completely different understanding.
Absolutely. And we'll come back and we'll do that. Absolutely. We've got links in the description of this program so people can go get the books and they can they can follow you on Instagram. Any final messages you want to put out there before we leave people today?
Yes, I want to thank you, my friend, for having me back on. It's always great. And so I'm working on a new website. I'm trying to, I need to have a social media presence at least that matches the depth of work I'm doing. And so I'm going to kind of balance that out. But deeply appreciative, my friend. Always good to be with my friend in Darkness Radio. And thank you guys for tuning in.
Absolutely appreciate you for coming back on the program. And, appearances you want to promote. Anywhere you're going to be in the near future?
Let me check this out real quick. I have the schedule right here.
Okay.
There's some really, really cool shows coming up. So April 1st, I'm going to be back with my buddy Sean through the Glass Darkly. April 5th, I'll be with Cosmic Convergence. The 6th of April, I'll be with Ted Rice on Alien Talk. Now, if you guys don't know who Ted Rice is, he is the experiencer that Dr. Carla Turner wrote her book about. The entire book was about this man, and his name is Ted Rice. He has his own podcast, and that is going to be an extremely, extremely deep show, just because he has went through basically the entirety of the phenomenon I've been describing in my research. So it's going to be deep. But yeah, those are some of the shows I have coming up. And follow me on Instagram, and you guys will be able to catch up with me wherever I'm going to be.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much, Nathaniel J. Gillis. And again, follow me on Instagram, and we'll have all the links here in the description of the show. Thank you so much for being with us, Nathaniel.
Not a problem, brother. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Want to thank Nathaniel Gillis for being on the big program today. Again, always bringing something to the program that makes you just go, and other things that make you absolutely not want to sleep at night. I don't know what it is about that cat, but boy, oh boy, I tell you, there's always something that he brings to the program that changes your entire perspective on life as we know it. But I want to thank him for being on this week and absolutely turning us on our ear, as it were. We'll have Nathaniel back on here relatively soon. We'll talk again about some of the concepts that he brought up during the program that need further investigation, that's for sure. And let us know if there's a guest that you want here on Darkness Radio. You can do so by emailing me, tim@darknessradio.com. It's real simple. And if you have stories for either Supernatural News or for Dumb Crimes, Stupid Criminals, you can use that email as well. Folks, coming up on the weekend, and although we went heavy on the dark and evil this weekend, we are looking at a celebratory weekend, especially if you're a Christian this weekend. Of course, we have Easter weekend coming up. I want to say happy Easter to everyone who's celebrating this weekend. Of course, it's a monumental weekend. There's a little bit of darkness before the light. Of course, we have Good Friday coming up tomorrow, and then leading into Easter Sunday. And for everyone out there who's celebrating, a happy Easter to you. And I know not everyone is, of course, in this audience is celebrating, so I'm probably speaking to a select part of our audience. There's all different faiths that listen to the show, and I recognize that. So to those that are celebrating, happy Easter. For those of you that are celebrating in other religions, different things, the spring equinox, a happy spring equinox to those that are celebrating that as well. And to those of you who are celebrating Ramadan, happy Ramadan to you. As we head into the weekend regardless, I want you to, again, continue to be a light in someone's darkness. I know as things are kind of slowing down this weekend, but and boy, did we get buried with snow this weekend, but we're kind of coming into a thaw this weekend as well. Even though we seem to be slowing down for the weekend, I would hope that you would continue to do something special for your neighbors, your friends, your neighbors, your family, your loved ones. Continue to make them feel special. Life is so short, folks. You know, I'm looking on social media over the last week, and I continue to see people losing loved ones. I continue to hear from people that there are these not only critical illnesses that people are coming up with, but just these harsh illnesses that people are coming up with left and right. It seems like everywhere you turn nowadays, people are getting either gravely ill or there's just these catastrophic things happening to people left and right. And I'm finding more and more that we need to lean on each other. And it seems like with such a divided society these days, we really do need to be sticking together. And with that, we really should be finding ways to reach out to one another, even though it seems like our society is more divided than ever. So if you can find a way to reach out to somebody this weekend, whether it just be a quick text or quick call or even just a note to somebody by email, then do so. No better time than this weekend, where it seems like holidays are upon us. So be a light in somebody's darkness this weekend and do that. I want to thank Surfshark today for sponsoring the program. Again, folks, little reminder for you. In order to keep our program afloat and keep our program in your ear, so to speak, great way of doing that is to support our sponsors. And I want to thank Surfshark for being on the program today. A reminder that you can keep your computer, you can keep your listening device, you can keep whatever it is that you're listening to this podcast safe and private by covering it up with Surfshark VPN. Not only that, but you get the malware, you get the antivirus, you get everything you can, that complete suite from Surfshark VPN to keep yourself safe behind. Plus, you can also do things like be able to get a whole new set of programs from Netflix, do other specialty things, be able to get that exclusive pair of shoes by doing it from behind Surfshark's VPN. Find out more by going to surfshark.deals/darkness. When you do so, you'll get an extra 3 months free by using the coupon code darkness at checkout. Once again, go to surfshark.deal/darkness. Use the coupon code darkness for an extra 3 months free at checkout. Be sure to take advantage of that code this weekend. All right? Folks, I want to thank Jessica Freeberg for filling in this week. She did an excellent job. Also want to give a special Easter shout out to Mally Fox and to Beer City Bruiser. I know a lot of you have been concerned about Beer City Bruiser and what's going on there. I talked to Bruiser this past week. The house is still extremely torn up, and the restoration company, unfortunately, is taking a long time getting the house back together. So I don't have an ETA as to when Bruiser will be back. I apologize for that. But again, Mally and Jess are doing a bang-up job in his stead. So we're going to keep rolling along here on Darkness Radio, and we'll keep you updated as to when Beer City Bruiser may be back. So there you go. Got a great week of shows lined up for you for next week. So we're going to keep rolling along. Keep listening to the best in true crime podcasting and the best in paranormal podcasting. You're listening to the best in both right here on Darkness Radio.